And they kind of looked at me and they said the answer was alcohol.
Tom Caulfield, James Whittle.
This is the story of The Tempest 2.
So, ladies and gentlemen, The Tempest 2.
Welcome back to the Tempest 2 podcast. Hi everyone, slightly nasally today. Must apologise in advance for my annoying voice.
It's a bit of a air cabin controller crew.
My voice?
Yeah.
I actually take great offence to that.
Do you?
Yeah. Coming in from Buenos Aires.
There's some lovely people who are in the cabin.
Yeah. good start. So, yeah, a bit ill this week.
Yeah.
Well, we've both been ill, actually, with different ailments.
I've actually been ill since November. I'm pretty sure I have an autoimmune disease.
Or you've got a baby.
I do have a baby that brings various germs back.
Baby started at nursery two weeks ago. Talk us through, very briefly, because it's not a parenting podcast.
Very briefly. Very half an hour later.
God, I miss her. So you're on drop-off duty at the moment, right?
You were
telling me they recommend that because babies hate their dads and love their mums.
Yeah, basically. So naturally, the Flory is more attached to the mum, to Elle.
Elle's nicer than you, so
easy to see that.
Yeah.
It also helps that Elle really doesn't want to do the drop-off because I think it's heartbreaking.
Okay, so you're the tough talker.
Yeah,
the
exactly.
Bad cop.
I'm just the stern... No emotions, no personality, just the bloke who drops her at the place that she's never been to before. Yeah, but they think that obviously makes that a little bit easier. So she is, 2 weeks in, and yeah, it's mental. It's actually harder than I thought it was going to be.
Right.
I mean, it's not, it's horrible at the time, but it's not something that's going to sound harsh, but I don't dwell on it.
Yeah.
When I drive away, I'd really do leave it there. I'd turn the music up.
Straight into Starbucks.
I'll put a bit of parental advisory music on that I can't do before. Because obviously it's hard when you open the door. I feel for the I don't even know you call her, the carer, the nursery woman.
Careful.
I feel for Kelly.
Kelly.
She's a lovely woman.
That is such a... nursery carer's name,
yeah.
Kelly.
And she really does live up to the bill. She's softly spoken. She's wonderful. But every time the door opens and she's there, Flory just loses her mind. I'm like, this can't be a nice feeling for you either.
At the sight of Kelly?
Yeah, just sees her starts crawling up me and screaming and whacking me in the head. And I'm just like, yeah, you're going to have loads of fun. Bye.
Here goes Kelly.
So initially, like last week, it's pretty brutal. They like send photo updates, and every photo update they send, Flory's like eyes are puffy, looks like she's been crying, and the updates are like, it's been
she's all right.
It's been poor to average, and then like it gets better each day. So today she's laughing at the camera and stuff, and she didn't cry immediately when Kelly opened the door, only after sort of 5 seconds or so.
So what you're getting from this is emotional trauma. You're getting. obviously the vast cost of it per month, and you've been ill basically since she started there.
Exactly. And you realize you sit outside in the car park and they have it's all done very well on apps.
Perfect.
So they give you ring the virtual doorbell when you park in the car park.
What, on the app?
Yeah, on the app.
Okay.
So that there's never a queue at the door. So then so then you go in there, you drop them off, and then you're on with your day. But I will say, it feels like a lot of freedom when they're in there.
Can imagine.
But she's in the room with 10 other kids, all swimming in germs.
Mm.
They're all basically, I'll chew that toy for a bit, throw it at you, you chew it, you give that to your parents, then, I'll give it to mine.
Then you chew it.
Yeah.
Once you get home.
What toy is this? I should probably eat that just to see if it's edible. So I've been ill since November, but I'm spending a lot of time in the evenings Googling symptoms. You know, what sort of tests can I get done? How can I throw sort of vitamins? How can I throw money at the problem?
Do you know what? This is going off on a tangent here, but I feel like it's important.
Good.
I feel like a great business would be, I read a book recently, what was it called? Outlive?
Yep.
By James Attia.
Yep.
And it talks about the problem with medicine at the moment. And medicine is very much a reactive industry. You get ill and then they try and cure it rather than let's figure out if you're going to get ill in 5 years' time, 10 years' time, whatever, and treat it before. And I've seen this on a bit of like the tech bro Twitter over in the US where people are paying enormous amounts of money to basically, it's almost like a gym membership, but it's purely based around health. So it's like MRI scanners and full blood work, etc.
Yeah, like it.
I think there's a business there for wealthy people to have some kind of wellness club.
Yeah.
Where, you know, you can just go get a checkup every month.
Just check my biomarkers.
Because like when I get ill, I'm like, I think it may be a male thing. It's like, I think I might be dying. Like there's something going on here that you're unaware of and I think I'm dying.
Yeah, no one else actually understands the seriousness of this illness that I'm going through.
You all need to be panicking.
Yeah, but this could be the end of me. No, that would be amazing. It happens with, so a lot of people when they're older, like over 60, you get like annual MOTs.
Yeah.
Nothing will do them, like private healthcare stuff. But yeah, imagine if you could just get that now.
Yeah.
And really put a prevention on that.
I looked at the one at Nuffield. I think it's like 1,200 quid. But it's not actually...
It's pretty basic, isn't it?
Yeah.
No, I agree.
Like, I want to know everything.
I want MRI scans. Like, how's my brain looking?
Yeah, how's my brain? Like, should I be aware of anything? Yeah. What's my... I actually did a testosterone test.
Ooh, like it.
Because... I'm not
because I've got tits.
Because I'm not putting on any muscle. I think it may be due to the lack of intensity in the gym and really not eating that much protein. So I was like, maybe I've got a lack of testosterone because I'm just being served ads left, right, and center. Being like, you've got no testosterone.
Yeah, it's a big thing at the moment.
So I did that. Did a blood test. Sent it off. Extremely high. Yeah. So. That's fine, but there's still no reason why.
But it's good to know, isn't it?
It's good to know. It was good to a weight off my shoulders.
Yeah, I think that'd be...
And I should put more weight on my shoulders, apparently.
It's 2024. Then you must be able to get a little app.
Well, Theranos was good, wasn't it?
What was that?
Theranos was the biggest con in corporate history.
Really?
Elizabeth Holmes, the blood testing company.
Yeah. Raised an obscene amount,
billions,
she?
And she's still in prison for the rest of her life.
Good stuff. So it's a good first attempt.
Yeah, let's just do that.
But must be able to scale it. I wonder if there's a point where you can make it, I mean, it's not going to be good for healthcare. Big healthcare companies, big pharma. But it's probably, in the long run, cheaper for countries than all the fucking medical care.
But that's the thing.
They don't want that.
These companies don't want
you to be
healthy.
Guys, this is a conspiracy theorist podcast.
And where's Kate Middleton when you need her?
Oh.
Kate, what's going on there? I'm down the rabbit hole.
Yeah, it's hard not to be, isn't it? When Twitter or X is just performing like it is with the memes.
What's she doing? Is there a divorce coming up? Is she dead?
What is the most likely?
Can't be dead.
The most likely is that...
He's been slapping it about.
Do you reckon?
Yeah. There's no smoke without fire. He's been cheating on with the Countess of Battenberg, whatever her name is. Timothy Chalamet, or whatever her name is.
What is she? The Marchioness of Cholmondeley?
Marchioness of Cholmondeley, but it's actually pronounced like Cholmondeley or something like that.
Yeah.
So Timothy Chalamet and the future king are bunking up.
I think she's just very ill.
Oh, wow. I think she's dying.
No, not that ill.
Well, what, like a bad cold?
No, like...
But why wouldn't they just come out and say it?
Yeah, I think that's what the real issue is. They fucked the comms.
The maddest part of it all was obviously the Photoshop thing came out.
Yeah.
You know, absolutely insane that they didn't think that people would have the time to look into that. So many people do. But then it was the response on the like branded Twitter. And it was like, oh, hi.
Oh, no.
Like many of you, I like to play around with Photoshop. What? God. What do you mean play around with Photoshop? Not like that. Not superimposing yourself on a photo with your kids.
Yeah, it's bizarre. Really weird activity.
Yeah. The crown must be rubbing their little hands together.
Exactly. It's not that thing, isn't it? It's when they propped the old boy up.
Yes.
Elizabeth's wife.
Yes.
I mean, husband. Could have been a wife. 2024.
Well, she could be transitioning.
Maybe
to become the king.
Maybe that's why William's so fuming.
Yeah, she's going to come out as trying to think of a Kieran Middleton.
like, ladies and gentlemen, the king and the king. It's the like,
king. It's like, well, long live the kings.
Long live
a pair of kings.
Oh, God.
Right. Talking about illness, you're going on a stag do tomorrow.
Oh. I forgot about that.
To Newcastle.
Going to the tomb.
On a minibus?
On a minibus.
On a minibus.
4.5 hours.
That is adventure.
On that is actually peak adventure. And my AMCC is going to be pumping.
Mate, you're going to be so resilient come next week.
So an 8 a.m. leave up to Newcastle on a minibus. There until Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
What have we got? We've got going to like a shooting bar. We're going to there's a various bars booked, which is in itself an issue. Yeah. And then it's a day of rugby, potentially to the dogs on Saturday.
The dogs?
Yes.
Oh, you know, wow.
Throw a few quid on some dogs.
Yeah, get down the dogs. Cheap pints. Very cheap pints.
So, I don't know.
The dogs.
I haven't actually ever been to dogs before.
Fucking episode of Snatch, are you? I've been to the dog, but it was in Wimbledon, so it was, it was a little bit different.
It's just a few Labradors prancing around.
So, oh, go on, Charlie! Yeah, that's amazing.
So, yeah, I've just shaken an illness, so I'll be walking straight into another one.
Oh, God.
So, yeah, I forgot about that, but that's all good. That's all good. Yeah, thanks for reminding me.
No problem. I'm not sure how to segue elegantly into the next part. Proper
tough,
podcast. They're like, they'll put some music on now and it'd be like, ba-da, 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 yeah. And then they'll cut. We won't do that.
We don't do that here.
No, budget. Interesting story. We've both got an individual we wanted to highlight today.
Yes, we do.
Before moving on to the main topic. Some of you may have seen, some of you may not, but the world's fastest accountant.
Oh, I quickly couldn't do your books.
So there's
bang, tax returns.
There's a bloke in London called Eugene. he should be an ambassador for QuickBooks, shouldn't he?
Oh my God.
Yeah, oh my brand partnership.
Right, let me just email.
Let's broker that deal. Eugene Amodadze, who is a London-based accountant. He's 31 years old. Pretty successful bloke. But just happens to be absolutely rapid.
Absolutely gaseous play.
He's absolutely gas. And ran a 9.9300 meters recently and might be going to the Olympics.
Yeah. That's obscene, isn't it? Like, it's like happens to be rapid, but then like being one of the top 10 quickest blokes in like the UK.
And they're all, you know, the whole thing is, are you going to leave your job? And he's like, no. Yeah. No, I'm doing pretty well over here. Why would I live like a sprinter, which is not earning anything?
It's mental.
But yeah, didn't go through any pathway, no academy.
He got into it when he's 26.
26. He was like, I'm pretty rapid here. He ran like 10.05, and they were like, that's quick. He was like, it is quick, you're right. I'll start training. Yeah, fair play to him.
I mean, that is... I wonder what like the other elite professional sprinters around the world...
They must be livid about it.
Must be like, bugger. Because a lot of... was watching a YouTube show the other day. It was actually a triathlete. I don't know how I ended up on it. But he was basically talking about these pro... I'm doing the hand gesture for pro. like
chucking it in
like
some commas
sprinters,
there.
Middle distance runners, triathletes. They're professional because it's kind of all they do, but they actually make the bulk of their money coaching.
Yeah, of course.
I wonder if like sprinters do that as well.
I would have thought so.
Probably.
Yeah.
Whereas no, not this guy.
You get paid very, very little if you're in the Olympic squad.
Yeah, you got to, really, I think to make money, you got an Olympic medal, haven't you?
Yeah,
to
and get then
a sponsorship and speak.
Lap it up like Greg Rutherford.
Yeah, get yourself on the circuit.
Roger Black.
Do some presenting.
Yeah. But don't come after our money.
No.
No.
No, because we are not Olympians. And that is in the subheading.
We're the opposite.
We're anti-Olympics.
So all in all, a big good luck to Eugene. Hope to see you in Paris because I don't know anyone else going to the Olympics. Because
no,
it's the quietest Olympics ever made. What is going on with that?
I don't know. Maybe we should see if we can get a last minute flight out there. What if you could go and watch any sport in the Olympics, what would it be?
I would like to see, I mean, being in the stadium is probably quite good just because you get a bit of everything.
True.
That's a great question. I don't know. I don't know. diving?
Yeah. No,
I'm not that. I'm not interested
at the answer is definitely what you said. It's like the main Saturday night in the athletics thing. That's probably the best.
What other things are there?
But seeing like just a pure Olympic sport that, you know, the ones that everyone just forgets about the rest of the time, like Greco-Roman wrestling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or the clay pigeon shooting.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, oh, shock, you didn't miss again.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, they just don't miss.
Yeah. Or like, I think the beach volleyball is like on the river in Paris. That could be quite cool.
Right, okay, yeah.
Some good athletes down there, isn't there?
You are awful.
Well, there are.
You're awful.
Don't take anything away from them.
You little Parisian pervert.
Parisian. Just loaf of garlic bread. Anyway, so yeah, I think... What was I saying? Yeah, anyway, I was faffing about the Olympic events. Are we done talking about Eugene?
I would have thought so, yeah.
Okay, great. Well, I'll move on to a lady that I actually wanted to talk about last week, but we thought we'd wait for her to finish. That's actually not even funny. It's outrageous. She has.
Oh, she has.
Yeah, she has. Oh, my God. Sorry, everyone. I actually don't even know what's funny. Right, so let me try and get this out.
Okay.
Right.
Over to you.
So this will make more sense now when I actually explain it. So this is a lady, an American woman called Cole Brower, who has been sailing around the world in a race called the Global Solo Challenge. For 150 days or so. But she's been getting loads of press over the last maybe 3 or 4 weeks because the thing is coming to an end, her journey was coming to an end. So I was going to mention it last week, but she hadn't actually arrived in the port in Spain yet, hence why I didn't bother. But she has since arrived.
So what's she done?
So she has single-handedly sailed around the world,
right,
non-stop via the Three Great Capes.
When you say non-stop, do you mean non-stop?
Yeah, no stopping anywhere.
What?
I know.
So how long was she at sea for?
148 days or 50 days, 150 days, something like that.
Fucking hell. She didn't dock once?
No docking.
So took everything with her?
Took everything with her.
Fucking wow, fair play.
And it's like... So she's the first female American. It's quite surprising that she's the first female American to do it, isn't it? Sail solo around the world.
They're not really into this shit, Americans.
They don't tend to do the sailing thing as well, do they?
They I guess they're good at climbing mountain stuff.
Yeah.
But they didn't really do the big exploration things.
No, they don't.
It was a few years after us that the first American team did the row.
Yeah. Yeah, you thought they'd be all over it.
That's because they just don't care about anything outside of their borders, do they?
Yeah,
really?
Exactly. And they like sail around Lake Michigan instead or something.
Fair, yeah.
But via the Three Great Capes, which I think, as a testing myself here, is the Cape Horn, Cape of Good Hope, and what's the other one? It's like the Australian Cape. I can't remember what it's called.
Cape Horn, it's Cape shame, of Good Hope, and the Cape.
Cape Tasman, something like that.
Maybe
Tasmanian that's Cape Hope.
Yeah, carry on. All.
But it gets a bit nuanced with with sailing because there's the English woman, the Dame Ellen MacArthur, who sailed solo around the world. There's a South African woman who sailed solo around the world, and then there's Cape Lewin. That was it
in Australia. Yeah, Hewin. You could have put $1 million on the desk, and I wouldn't have guessed that.
Yeah. And then there's a very young Dutch female who sailed solo, but it's all based around the different boats that you do it in. So this race, this Global Solo Challenge, its whole like USP is that it's done in a unique format that makes it like a level playing field. Sailing is one of those things, it appears, where cash really does count and kind of equals speed when you're using like materials that are quicker and I guess technology that helps find the quicker wins and stuff as well. So this event levels the playing field by staggering the start. So if you're in an old ship boat, you start first.
Oh.
And the idea is that the handicap system means that you would finish roughly around the same sort of time. She was the first female to finish, ended up finishing about 9 days after the winner. But she's obviously, because being American and being a young female, she's gone pretty mega. So she's been on all the talk shows and
really
done all that stuff. So yeah, she's going to be on. She's going to be joining the circuit soon, I imagine. Welcome, Cole.
Yeah, welcome. If you could give us some of the work that you can't fit into your schedule, that would be most appreciated.
Yeah, but she was cool. To be fair, it was one of them. And
you met her.
Yeah, online.
In the chat room.
I tried to join one of her lives once and she sat me down. But you know when you see different things, oh, this person's done that, and they all look kind of the same. And then it's, oh, this American woman is sailing and she's got Instagram, 500,000 followers. She just does it well. You know, she's got all the trending music from TikTok, all the captions, edited very well. She's crushed it.
So what you're saying is she has done what we should have done 10 years ago.
Yes.
And done it properly.
Yes. Yeah. And what we did, woo, is we sent JPEGs about the size of half a kilobyte.
Hey, we didn't have start. We didn't have the technology to be on any kind of social media.
No. And we actually, you should see the size of the disc that we had to take to ship information. I've lost it again. No,
you should see
the size of the dome. That was it. So what I'm saying is, we had to like basically bolt this massive mushroom.
Massive mushroom. Right. Anyway, we're gonna have to end today's.
Oh no!
I think what James is trying to say is we put a satellite system that's meant to be on a big leisure boat, which weighed 28 kilos on the front of ours. However, if we were to do the Atlantic today, we would use a Starlink, which we actually have. We are streaming now on a Starlink.
Yes,
we would
are.
Use that.
Yes,
but how different would the row be if we had TikTok and Instagram?
It'd be dangerous. It wouldn't be any rowing.
It would just be us dancing.
So what should we do next? Yeah. It would have been very unproductive.
Yeah.
God, yeah, that would make it. I wonder if they're all using Starlink now. They must be
mad if they're not.
Because you don't even need to. You can like stow it away when you're not using it.
You get so many followers if you were just live updates on the Atlantic.
Yeah, and that's literally what this coal woman was doing.
Urgh, I hate that we did it a decade ago.
But it's all like very good quality as well. There's
interesting.
No glitching. Some of the photos that got posted and above. I do blame our social media manager at the time, John.
John McManus.
It was absolutely.
Oh, there you go. I've named him.
The copy was so lazy. But anyway, right, the next one that we do.
Content.
The social is going to be.
I wonder if we could break the world record for around the world sail. What is it?
Oh, it's very fast.
Is it?
I think we'd have to find a little.
A billionaire to give us their boat.
I was going to say a loophole. But like one of these races that would make it, you know, the first people to sail around the world in a dinghy or something.
A dinghy?
God. That'd be scary, wouldn't it? Around Cape Lewin.
Cape Lewin, my new favourite cape. So the current record is, holy smokes, 40 days?
No, it can't be right.
That's quicker than we did the Atlantic by 2 weeks.
2 weeks quicker.
Francois, you great liar. He's a cheating Frenchman. I don't believe it for a second. 40 days? So he left from blah, blah, blah.
Blah, blah, blah. You're going to have to share that.
Sorry,
we're
guys.
On a podcast, remember?
Sorry, blah, 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 blah. Southern Ocean around the Antarctic continent, passing Cape Horn, Cape Cook. He did all the capes. Wow.
Start and finish in France?
Is that beatable?
No.
Why?
I mean, yeah, at some point, yeah.
No, I mean by us.
Well, I mean... Given that we've not sailed ever...
Hey, that's our thing. That's our thing.
I think maybe we try and hire Francois.
Yeah. And just
do it with him.
And just... It's like, are you guys going to help?
We just do TikTok videos downstairs.
Fuck you, Francois. We're dancing on TikTok. Here we go. Francois, get out of our shot. It's not about you. Right. Okay. That's super interesting. I'll look into that.
Anyway. So, yeah. She's worth checking out. Cole Brower. She's a good female role model. Because Lord knows they're lacking.
Amen. Oh, wow. This one, she's got like a pair of heels on. Oh, she's really leaned into the social. Well done,
yeah,
Cole.
She wears AirPod Maxes.
Oh.
She knows the drill there.
Okay, well done. Right.
Now to the main segment. Yeah, we haven't even got to the main segment.
We're 25 minutes in.
Try and control these giggles we've got. I'm not sure what's going on.
I'll cut some of them out because that's wild.
Okay, you won't. By the way, you definitely won't.
You've heard in of the giggles, you'll know that's a lie.
This is as raw as it gets. So the last segment is, I know that we are quite guilty of moaning about the weather a lot, especially me, and how it makes us depressed. However, a study came out and went wild on Twitter the last week, which was a mental well-being global report. And basically what it did was, over a few criteria, listed from 1 to whatever, 100, the happiest and the most depressed countries in the world. And we've got a bit of a problem with this list. it seems absolute bullshit. So all the headlines are that the UK is the second most depressing country on the planet.
Seems harsh, doesn't it?
Disgust. Number one is Uzbekistan. Yeah, been there, but I can maybe see that.
It seems harsh to them as well.
UK, behind everyone else, is the second most depressing country in the world. Now, I'm not sure that's strictly true.
It feels harsh. What were the parameters? I remember you did share some of them. And like, how many people do we think they asked?
So you've what you've done there is asked me a couple of questions. I'm not really sure. Right, so there was basically 500,000 responses.
That's a lot.
71 countries. And the criteria were, it was basically there was a set number of questions.
Yeah.
And they essentially were ranking mood and outlook, social self, adaptability and resilience, drive and motivation, mind-body connection, cognition, all these kind of six different dimensions of mental well-being and happiness. And the key thing here is, yeah, they asked 500,000 people, but it required them to stop for 15 minutes and answer these questions. So it's a 15-minute survey and everyone gets asked the same questions. So number one, the top 10 is as follows. Dominican Republic, Sri Lanka, Tanzania, Panama, Malaysia, Nigeria, Venezuela, El Salvador, Costa Rica, and Uruguay.
El Salvador, the drug cartel capital, right?
Yes.
Okay.
So, I mean, just going off that list, I mean, Dominican Republic, stricken by poverty, yeah. Big tourism kind of place, obviously. Sunny, nice beaches.
Yeah.
Fine, okay. Sri Lanka, yeah, pretty nice. Tanzania, interesting. Panama is an interesting one. Panama is the fourth happiest country in the world. So I'm just really not sure how they've got to this list,
no,
to be honest.
I'm with you. I think it's definitely more of a reflection of the psychology of the people in these countries.
Yes.
Than actually a objective look at the happiness levels there. If you were to ask me, right, we're going to ask every country in the world, or the people in every country in the world, or 71 countries in the world, who would give the most negative responses, then I would put the UK at number two.
Yeah.
We're, as a group of people, just wildly pessimistic. And that's just historically the case.
And self-deprecating.
Exactly. If you ask us, you know, how's work, same shit, different day, is probably the most given
garbage
answer in the country. So that's one thing. Second thing is, you should know to not ask people in the UK, or like not put any value on any answers that people that have 15 minutes to spare on a quiz or a question isn't worth much. Last time we did that, we ended up leaving Europe.
Yeah, it's the same people.
It's the same people
it's
doing
the Brexiteers.
And I think when you look at, we've got the list in front of us of the 10 happiest countries versus the 10 unhappiest countries. And there's probably a bit of a correlation. The things that stand out are the 10 happiest countries are all quite close to the equator. Probably
sunny,
a lot
hot,
of sun.
Good weather.
Warmer, for sure. The people in those countries probably give less of a fuck about things about like the economy,
yeah,
productivity.
I mean, the economy on that top 10 list is terrible. Absolutely terrible.
It is. Yeah, you're right. It truly is. But apparently, the people that they asked at least don't care about that.
So I wonder
where they asked people. So I'm presuming that they had clipboards out and they were speaking to people in an average UK city or maybe several, walking down a high street in the middle of the day, in the rain, and they've got 15 minutes to spare. That is a pretty small cross-section of the UK.
Yeah, so you're asking the same people who stop when charity workers ask them for a minute of their time. Or...
You happy? Fuck no.
Yeah.
Definitely not. Yeah. I'm on the high street. I'm on a high street.
Yeah.
The most depressing place in Britain.
Yeah.
Number six. This just sums up how bullshit this is. The sixth most unhappiest country in the world is Australia.
Yeah.
What?
And that's a good point. When you look at the unhappy places, there's definitely a few countries there. Australia, number six. Ireland are at number eight.
Yeah.
I'd put Ireland as... Everyone I know from Ireland, they're quite chirpy, aren't they? Quite happy individuals. They might be lying. But I don't know, it feels a bit harsh, a bit shallow. But it's definitely good little food for thought, isn't it?
Yeah, so it got us thinking. So where is the least depressing place you've ever been? Where you've got there and been like, this is pretty nice. Like, I'm pretty happy here.
Yeah, I mean, my answer is Hawaii.
Yeah.
And annoyingly, it's probably more like the countries in the top 10 happiest than the bottom, as in productivity of that country is pretty poor.
Yeah.
It's a base around tourism. It really uses the weather to its advantage and the scenery. And everyone there would never be on time if you held a gun to their head.
Yeah.
It's a very chilled out place.
Island time.
Yeah, which... probably is part of the reason why it feels the least depressing. What about yourself?
So I thought long and hard about this, and I'm similar, but mine would probably be like the BVIs.
Yeah, I mean,
just lovely.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's just, you're on a boat. it's just really, really nice.
Yeah,
really nice. It's probably one of the places I've been where I'm just like, this is like pretty happy. And it's the only
I'm overwhelmingly
it's the
happy.
Only 2 week holiday I've been on in the last 10 years, and so it's like, yeah, this is really nice. But most depressing,
most depressing
is even
place.
More interesting. Where would you, let's say on our travels, where's the most depressing place that you can think of? Well, we've been there, and it's like, oh my god, this place is bad.
Yeah, I think this is slightly linked to my mood during the time as well.
Well, that's probably relevant to when people's mood, what people's moods were when they were asking these
totally.
Questions.
Yeah, completely. It's probably Patagonia.
There were some towns in Patagonia off the beaten track that were
and again,
depressing.
When I think about the tiny villages and towns, they're all those ones that are a bit bleak are also in the pouring rain or the snow. So again, we will talk about it. Weather will play a big part in the overall happiness of a place. What about your most depressing place?
I mean, yeah, Patagonia is definitely up there. Some of those places were bad. Fresno in California.
Yeah, that's a very good point.
When we escaped Yosemite because we were getting cabin fever and we went to watch a film in Fresno. That place was pretty bleak, wasn't it?
Yeah, definitely. There's actually, there's pockets of places in the US. The US is a funny one because... Are they on the list? Are they like middle ground?
They're basically bang in the middle of the US.
But I think it's one of those places that on the surface, you know, when you have that conversation with someone or you're stuck in an elevator with them and they're the happiest people in the world, you know, you have a blessed day. You are absolutely awesome. This is amazing.
When you're just buying a sandwich.
Exactly. But there's like pockets, like when you are walking in like downtown LA or something and then... the homelessness section kicks in.
Yeah.
You're like, whoa, okay, this is maybe not as happy as a country as as it seems.
So what would you say is the most depressing town in the UK? Can you guess? Oh, you won't get it, don't bother.
I can't really because I haven't got my glasses. I'm going to guess at local one to me, Luton.
No, Falmouth. In Cornwall.
Falmouth?
Yeah. Falmouth is quite nice, isn't it?
I thought it was, yeah.
Pretty sure Falmouth's all right.
Is there a uni there, isn't there?
Falmouth uni, yeah. I don't know. Falmouth, Peterborough, never been.
Peterborough.
Aberdeen. Never been.
See that.
Aloha in Scotland. Yeah. Tiverton in Devon. God, they're getting a bit depressed down the south, aren't they? Yeovil. Ellesmere Port, Portsmouth, and Paignton in Devon. Blimey. Oh, Crawley, West Sussex. Luton, number 11. There you go. 11, Croydon. Yeah, Croydon's bad. Swindon. Widnes. Torquay, Devon. Fucking Teignmouth, Devon. Devon's like the most depressed place in the UK.
Yeah.
And it gets the most sun.
Cornwall is as well, isn't it? I think it's.
Why?
There's not a huge amount going
on. Going on,
there,
yeah. Bit bleak.
And probably gets battered by the weather as well, doesn't it?
Yeah. Well, I'm glad we touched on all that.
I think it's really interesting because I think it's just a reflection of the people.
If you're miserable somewhere, you're miserable everywhere.
Yeah. The only place misery exists is inside, in between your ears.
As they say in Devon.
So, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, most depressed place in the UK.
So what advice would you give to someone who's living in a miserable town?
Leave the town.
Yeah, I saw that on Twitter. Mm. They were this was like being shared, and they're like, "What's the answer then?" And everyone's like, "Move." But yeah, I mean, we speak regularly. One of these days, we will be podding from a sunny place.
We're not allowed
in the middle of winter.
We're not allowed.
Not allowed.
Our wives won't let us.
Sad, isn't it?
Every time I bring it up, I'm like, "Should we? You know, maybe Jan, Feb next year? Like, you're Spanish." Let's go down to Spain, back to your roots. She's like, what are you talking about? We live here. It's just like, oh.
I think that's it, though. If you can pitch it as a long holiday, productive holiday, would you get somewhere?
No.
It's hard, isn't it? You need a fully remote job.
Yeah, she doesn't have that. Yeah, she could, though. She just said, I'm fucking going for 2 months, though. I'm not going to do anything. Anyway, we're getting into a personal argument here. I'm digging up my issues. God, I hope she's not listening.
She's not.
No, she doesn't give a shit. Anyway, guys, thank you so much for tuning in.
It's been an absolute pleasure to speak to you for these 40 minutes.
40. One of the longest in a long time. So you're welcome. Get out there. Just remember, if you're based in the UK, in a week's time, the clocks change.
Oh, they do. They spring forward.
7:30 p.m. sunset, and we're on the home straight.
Oh, my God.
Just another 2 months of rain, and then we're in. Oh, baby.
Here we go. Okay. Right, enjoy the floods in the UK, and we'll see you next week.
And sorry for all our listeners in Uzbekistan. Have a good one.
Bye-bye, guys.